Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. You're going to be glad you're with me, too, because I got cool people. Cool people hang out with me because I'm so cool, right? That's the story I'm sticking to. I know I get delusional sometimes, but, you know, it's the sky's beautiful in my world. As Joan Pride well knows, Joan is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and she's our good friend, and she likes it in my world, don't you, Joan?
I'm taking the fifth on everything.
Come on. You've seen how blue the sky is in my world.
Oh, yeah, and it frightens me.
With my music and my and all my things around me? Huh?
Okay, whatever.
Hey, Joan, welcome back.
Thank you.
The big news in the letter this week, in the Kiplinger letter this week, is the automobile industry. And I was just telling the audience before you got here about all the things. Well, I was telling them about how from after this year forward, from 2010 forward, we are entering a new era, completely new era, unlike we've ever seen in the history of America in the marketplace. I mean, look at what's changed. Look at how the banking industry has changed, how Wall Street's changed, how the mortgage industry has changed, how the automobile industry now has changed.
Right.
So many different things that are we're going to have to sort out and become accustomed to, but nothing is any more than the automobile industry.
Oh, yes.
And you guys report on that this year. Tell us what's going on.
Well, we take kind of a long view. We look ahead and say 5 years from now, you're going to have a completely revamped U.S. auto industry. The thing I'm happy about is that we're going to have a U.S. auto industry in this estimation.
Right.
Because I was beginning to worry there that there might be nothing, but we're saying at the most we're going to have two major car makers and a lot fewer parts makers, dealers, and the cars are going to be very different too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. And part of that, the cars are going to be different, is going to be because of some of the market realities. But I'm afraid part of it is going to be because of some government influence, which I'm not happy about.
Okay.
But you're right about that. So you're saying two car companies. You're saying basically Ford and whatever else. And, of course, you're talking about the American domicile companies.
Yes.
We'll still have all the other guys, Toyota, Nissan, Mercedes, Mazda, Honda, all those guys. They're still going to be here. They're the other, you know, you've heard of the other white meat? They're the other automobile white meat, right?
Yes.
And so now, one of the things that I predicted about five or six years ago that you guys, I don't think you guys report on this week, that I think is really important to point out, because this has to do with the car dealers. I saw the way people were picking out their cars online, like I did. I went online and I noodled around. We bought two new cars in the last 3 years. And so we picked it out online. We chose the car we wanted online. I knew what the price was going to be, blah, blah, blah. And years ago when I did that, I said, okay, what's to prevent me from just buying this car online? And, of course, the reason was because of the franchises that the dealers have with the company.
Right.
Well, now that those companies are in bankruptcy, those kinds of deals are going to morph. Dissolve in to some degree, and they're going to morph. And so I'm predicting now that this has happened, that what I predicted 5 years ago will come to pass fairly soon, and that is that you'll be able to sit in the comfort of your own home, select the new car you want, pick it out, buy it, have your credit checked, do the credit right there in your living room, and a couple of weeks later, pick your car up at a delivery station.
Aren't you going to miss going to dealerships?
Well, there'll still be some. I'm not saying the dealerships will go away. I'm just saying this will be one of the options you'll have.
But aren't you going to miss going to them?
Well, I'm not saying that. Look, those guys do a good job. There's no question about that, because everybody is not going to want to do that. I'm not saying this is the way everybody will buy an automobile.
No,
I'm
but
saying,
the legwork involved, I would think, for a buyer can be a pain in the neck.
It'll be one of your options.
Right.
That will be one of the residuals of this bankruptcy that Chrysler and GM have gone through.
Right.
And so that's one of my...
People will still want to kick the tires, some will, but not everybody.
That's exactly right. You'll have both options. Yeah. But I will tell you, Joan, my grandchildren will not know what a dealer looks like by the time they... I think that dealerships, automobile dealerships, will be very, very different if it existing as we now know them at all in, say, 20 years.
So you more likely have car, I guess... Auto malls, like, for example, we have something called CarMax. I don't know if it's nationwide, but we have a company called CarMax in our area that has all sorts of different models.
But aren't they used cars? Aren't those used cars?
Not all,
okay.
though.
Okay. All right,
No, they're not.
Many new.
Many new.
Well, I just don't... See, here's the thing, Joan. One of the things that's helped the United States become a lot less... in peril of a recession, a classic recession, not the one we're in now, which was manufactured. This a classic recession where you got too much supply and not enough demand, oversupply and less demand. We've helped ourselves by installing something called just-in-time inventory management,
mm-hmm.
not just in case.
Right.
Well, the automobile industry's parking hundreds of cars on a parking lot waiting on people to come by. That's just in case.
Yes.
And that's the 20th century model, and it won't work in the 21st century.
Right.
In my opinion.
That's right.
And so there may be some cars out there, but it'll be one car maybe of each model, and you'll be able to see it and drive it, but the one you want will be here in 2 weeks.
Wow.
I think that's what we're looking at down the road. Now, I know that's blasphemy to some people, but folks, it's just something that you're going to be able to count on. Because I'll tell you something else, Joan. The more you build a car in the government's image, or the more you build a car to be completely based on efficiency,
mm-hmm.
the less pretty it is.
Ah.
And the less excited you get about
it. You guys like your pretty cars, I know.
Well, I love my pretty car. I sure do. Yeah, absolutely. I love it. I like my color. I like my size. I like my SUV. I'm an SUV lover. How about you? You got an SUV, John?
Oh, yeah, a little one.
Yeah, a little one. I don't have a little one. I got a big one. 2020 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. We're going to talk some more about where the automobile industry is going to go and other issues, including some small business stuff from the SBA after these messages. 20 after. Stay with us. It's 23 after the hour. Little Jimi Hendrix bringing us back. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you very much for checking it out. You can find my blog there. You can find, by the way, my new blog post is called The 3 Clocks of Small Business. I hope you'll check that out. I think you'll like it. Leave a comment when you get there, too, by the way. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. That's comes to you every Sunday afternoon by email. Check out my knowledge base, AskJim.biz, right off the homepage at smallbusinessadvocate.com. Archives, articles, brain trust members, lots of stuff. 5 seconds, 1 minute, 3 minutes, 15 minutes. We got something that will help you. Yeah, I hope so. Check it out. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. We're talking about the automobile industry, the American automobile industry, regardless of where, of who's making the cars. We're talking about the whole thing. And, Joan, you guys point out that by 2019... U.S. firms, I guess you're talking about the two or three that will be left, will make half of the 10 million cars manufactured here?
Yes.
Hmm.
And we're going to say look for 7.2 million imported vehicles by that time.
So what you guys are pointing out, and I think very well here, is that the global demand for automobiles is going to go up significantly, but the automobile industry, as we know it, is going to change. Not only under the current circumstances, but to meet that new demand.
Right. That's what it sounds like, sure.
Somebody on my show, and I'm trying to remember who it was in the last few days, said, was talking about the growth of the middle class in India and China and places like that. And he was talking about what income level people get to, and when they get to that income level, they start wanting an automobile.
They start wanting an automobile.
They get to a certain income. He said the same thing happened in America, and I've forgotten what that level is. I've forgotten the number he used, but he said at some point in time, and then the number is really not important, because he said at some point in time, when people get into the middle class, they're going to want to start wanting automobiles, and he was talking about the that some of these new cars that you guys are predicting are not going to cost $20,000 or $30,000. They're going to cost $5,000 maybe.
Right, which is amazing to me.
Mm-hmm. There's a company called Tata. Literally, I'm not making this up. T A T. I know. T A T A.
Okay.
Is the name of the company. Somebody recommended I invest in it, and I just couldn't make myself do it. And I couldn't make myself buy a stock of a company named Tata. But anyway,
I really can't blame you.
I know. So, but that's a company, an Indian company, as I remember, that's going to be making some of these little cars. And they're not just little. They're supposedly going to be safe, but you're going to have to spool the window down. You can't, it's not going to have electric windows.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not going to have air conditioning, and not going to have a lot of fancy stuff. It's just going to get you here, from here to there.
Okay.
So that's going to, so when we, back to what we said earlier about, Joan, about how things are going to change. When you talk about all these cars being built, we can't be thinking about Crown Vicks and Honda Accords and Lexus. We're probably going to be thinking about, a lot of them are going to be different automobiles than what we're thinking about right now.
Sure.
So talk to us about the job situation here in the automobile industry.
Well, how come I have to talk about the bad news?
Well,
this isn't fair.
That's what I have you here for.
Well, we say we expect quarter of a million more industry jobs to be gone by the end of next year, because you're gonna see the GM and Chrysler bankruptcies playing out over that time.
Now let's break this out a little bit, Joan, because there are only about 60-something thousand actual workers in the big three right now.
Okay.
In other words, there are less than 100,000 people working right now in the big three.
Okay.
So if you got a 250,000 job loss, then obviously you're going to still be making cars, so you're going to be losing very few probably of what's left there in making cars. So those other 250 are going to come from the dealerships.
Exactly.
And from
parts,
the parts suppliers,
maybe?
Suppliers.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this, Joan, is not Detroit we're talking now.
This is everywhere.
We're talking, we're talking Decatur, Georgia.
Absolutely.
Decatur, Illinois, Decatur, Alabama. We're talking about, Heartland America.
Right.
Not just Detroit.
Right, exactly.
And in dealers, Dimebox, the dealer in Dimebox, Texas.
Yep.
And the guy who fixes your car there and does your warranty work, this is part of the resetting.
You're right.
Of the American automobile industry.
Right. We've already felt it in my area, where dealerships have been told by the automobile manufacturer, we're pulling out, we're not going to do business with you anymore.
Yep. And Joan, the thing that's so upsetting about all this is what I've been saying for over 10 years now. I've been telling people that the problem we have now is not change. Change is not any different than it was, 2,000 years ago. A computer's just a fancy wheel. The difference, the thing that's different is the velocity of the change.
Yes.
And that's what's taking our breath away, Joan.
Absolutely.
The velocity of the change, and we're seeing it in the automobile industry. It's happening in front of our very eyes.
Right.
And that's the issue that's really making us all kind of be schizophrenic and I don't know. I don't have any good drugs, but if I had some, maybe I might try them. 29 after, right back with our good friend Joan Pride. Here's James Brown to take us out.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me and having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and that's what we're talking about, the most recent Kiplinger Editor. Joan, over on page two, the economy, the long-term interest rates are edging up. This has kind of got people kind of jumpy right now, hasn't it?
Oh, sure does. Yeah, definitely.
Is it foretelling inflation?
Well, we're saying expect more volatility, at least,
yeah,
in rates. I'm not sure. You know, the Fed is going to let interest rates rise for now, and I would think that kind of damps down inflation if you're letting rates go up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the one thing that you guys are saying is that this rise in interest rates is not going to help the home industry, the home buying industry.
Well, exactly. In fact, refinancings are getting hit right now, and you can mm-hmm. see the pace of refinancings is slowing.
But you know, Joan, some of these folks right now, what is it? What is interest? 6%, 5.75%, something like that.
Yeah.
For a mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
What are they? Were they freaking out over that in 1970? Okay, so back in the 70s, I'm not going to say when.
Yeah, well, I remember. I know.
Back
what you're
in the 70s, I bought my first house.
Yeah.
Came out of the Army, bought my first house. Interest rates were My interest rate was 8.75%.
And that was pretty good because it got a lot worse after that.
8.75%. So I thought it was a good rate back in those days.
Yeah.
And so, My point is, if people are getting freaked out over having to pay 6% for 30 years, get over it.
Right.
You know, I mean, if that's keeping you from buying a house, you're crazy.
Right.
If you can lock in 6% for 30 years, jump all over that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm telling you, establishing a house payment this year is one of the best investments you can make. Because theoretically your income is going to be rising as you get older,
right?
And your home, wouldn't we like to be able to lock in our insurance and our utility bill and everything else for 30 years?
Oh, sure.
You know, but I mean, think about that, Joe. Think about the ability to lock in something that is a huge part of your life.
Right.
To lock the cost of that in for all those years, it's that's a heck of a deal.
Oh, sure.
So I think people need to get over that. The Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, Joan, is a huge, huge elephant in the living room of the American economy.
Yeah.
The American debt, the national debt, virtually doubled when the government nationalized those two organizations.
Oof.
Because they had $5 trillion.
Wow. Yeah.
$5 trillion in exposure. And that's the number I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And when the government took them over, that became ours, Joan, mine and yours.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
So what's going to happen with those guys, you know? You guys
support
on that this
week.
Well,
we're saying that uncertainty is going to linger about their future because they're going to be in conservatorship probably, you know, till sometime next year. And they have to figure out what to do. They can't privatize them completely, and they don't really want outright government ownership. So we're saying there's going to be a hybrid model, and this is interesting. We say akin to a public utility.
In animals, when you produce a hybrid, you produce a barren animal.
Yes, that's right.
And that's what I predict. If this becomes a hybrid, it'll be a barren organization.
Like a mule?
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be a barren organization. It will not be fruitful, Joan.
Wow.
It will not go forth and be fruitful.
No, okay.
So when I think about the government creating anything hybrid, I just have to laugh. I can't help it. It's just laughable to me. Mm-hmm. But the government created this monster, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They created it. It's all theirs. And now
they've always been strange entities because they've been considered, as we call them, government-sponsored entities, which they didn't have explicit backing of the federal government, but everybody kind of winked and nodded and knew that they really did have the backing of the federal government. So I don't know what you call that.
Well, as we now know, it was explicit.
Yes.
It just wasn't in writing, so to speak.
Right.
But anyway, what a and see, folks, this is another example, Joan, of how things are going to be different in the future. I mean, all for the last 40 years, we've had, or 35 years, we've had Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Right.
As rude as they were, as as corrupt as they may have been,
right,
we had them to help with home ownership.
Uh-huh.
Now we're going to have something different. So
yeah,
this is another example of what's going to be different. Joan, this next thing is some bad news. And we're going to talk about it after the break. And this is, folks, this is, America is a debtor country. Other people in other countries are buying our debt. The question we come back is, are they going to continue to do that? 20 Till, it's a cautionary tale. Stay with us.
Sitting in the morning sun. I'll be sitting in the evening.
Little Otis bringing us back. Otis Redding. 17 Till, I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan loves it when I take us back to into the Wayback Machine, right, Joan?
Yeah, whatever.
Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, my music critic, and an outstanding member of the Brain Trust. And folks, I encourage you to check out the Kiplinger website, kiplinger.com, and you can find all the publications that they have there, and all the other things that they have, the background, all the stuff way back in the back of the website, where you can find the deep research and not just the snippets that they publish in their letters, including the Kiplinger letter, the weekly flagship. Then they got four biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the biofuels letter, which is the new one. And then they got that magazine thing.
You bet. Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And that phone number thing.
The phone number thing is a toll-free number. It's 800-544-0155.
And that 90-day free trial thing, or 30-day. How many? 30 or 90?
I think it's just 30.
You know, 90 is the new 30, don't you?
Yeah.
You guys might want to get with a program there.
I'll remember that.
Hey, Joan, one of the ways we've been able to finance, and it's been part of the problem here, is we've been a debtor nation. We borrowed a lot of money as consumers, as a nation, and as a civilization, and not saved very much. So the rest of the world has been saving a lot. And that money that they've been saving has been coming here by the foreign institutions and the governments buying our currency, because the U.S. dollar has been, at least, up until maybe like in the next 30 minutes, it has been the currency of choice, hasn't it?
That's right.
The reserve currency, they call it.
You bet.
Because it's been like almost like gold. Well, that may be changing, according to Kiplinger.
Right. Well, and that's true. And this is, I think, what you were alluding to at the end of the last segment there. We're saying that foreign direct investment in the U.S. has been dropping and will keep dropping through 2009 and 2010.
Yeah. And you know, Joan, just this week, the Russian president, Medvedev, said that he wants to see other currencies emerge as a reserve currency and go away from. Yeah, they're not rattling sabers anymore. They're rattling their money bags.
Yeah.
These days, Joan. He wants China and Russia and other countries to choose another currency, and so there's a lot of fiscal saber rattling, monetary saber rattling going on these days, Joan. And this is something we all need to pay attention to, Joan, because think about this, at a time when our country needs a lot of money because we got all this deficit spending, what's going to happen if countries and other institutions outside of our country don't want what we have, don't want to loan us any money?
And that's been a question people have asked for years and worried about and kind of pushed under the rug at some point, I think. But now it's really a real question.
There's a movie, and I don't like to recommend it because two of my least favorite actors are in it. But there's a movie from 1980-81 called Rollover. You can still get it. I ordered it because I wanted to watch it. Rollover, ladies and gentlemen, it's about when the Arab countries refused to roll over the money they had in our banks. And the problems that movie is a prophecy, a potential prophecy, Joan, of what could happen to us. So, folks, you might want to check that out and just see. It'll help you. I think it'll help you understand what's going on. Joan, the jobless rate, is it foretelling an upturn in the economy?
Well, we're saying that the job market is pointing in that direction because we're saying, and we expect, I mean, May we lost 345,000 jobs, which sounds terrible, but that was actually better than the average of 643,000 the 6 months prior to that.
We don't like the number, but we like the trend.
Well, exactly.
So is that telling, is that what you guys are saying, that that might be pointing to an upturn in the economy?
Right. Now, we are pointing out that the jobless rate will still keep going up, but we've always said, we've talked about it on the show, that employment is a lagging economic
mm-hmm.
indicator.
Mm-hmm. And the stock market is a leading.
The leading, yes.
Mm-hmm. So we're seeing that playing out right now, aren't we?
Sure. That's
in front of in front of our very eyes. So
that's right.
We'll have to see what will happen. But at least as for right now, that part of the equation looks like it's going as planned, or not as planned, but as hoped, and historically
yeah.
as it has been. Joan, I was in D.C. a month ago, not a
yes.
month ago, 3 weeks ago, and with the SBA helping the new administrator, Karen Mills, celebrate Small Business Week. I was standing right there when all this happened, and when she announced the new lending package for small businesses, and you guys report on what the SBA is working on.
Right, and we're saying that we expect that the SBA to become more aggressive, that they want to help companies that are growing and innovative, which should be interesting. And the new administrator, Karen Mills, we say wants to give small businesses more of the tools they need to be competitive in global markets.
Well, one of the things she announced was a $35,000 loan with no interest for a while and five years to pay back. But it had to be a company that was already in operation.
Okay.
It's not for startups.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be something you'd go through a bank to do. And it was really good terms. It is really good terms. So, folks, you might want to check that out. And that's just now being rolled out. But it will be interesting to me, Joan, and we'll be reporting on it. You and I both will be right here on our show. Some of the new programs. It'll be interesting to see how Karen Mills, a former venture capitalist, what kind of program she's going to have for the government, maybe to finally help small business owners. Tin Till, stay with us. We'll be right back. Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Don't forget to check out my website, smallbusinessadvocate.com. You can follow me on Twitter, too, by the way, at Jim Blassingame. Joan Pride is our guest. Joan, and by the way, Joan's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, let's move down to the water situation. This is something that's probably going to hit a fair amount of folks across America there, and that's some of the good news from Washington for businesses on the water bill. Tell us about that.
Well, we think that there's a good chance of what we call a water bill will pass this year. And what we mean by that is companies that depend on clean water for power generation, farming, or manufacturing are going to get assistance. You get grants to overhaul waste and drinking water systems, which would be very important.
And would this be for communities and businesses? How's that money going to roll? How are those grants going to roll out? Are they going to go to the municipalities or to the companies themselves?
Well, you know, I don't think it's clear from what we say here.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure. I would think it would have to be to the municipalities,
but maybe the private sector
would get it too.
But here's the thing. See, here's how that works. You can't offer a new company. You can't prospect for a new company to come into your community, to your industrial center, your industrial complex,
yeah,
if you don't have the infrastructure.
Right.
So I guess this is what that's talking about. They're going to create additional ways to add infrastructure capacity.
Right.
Meaning the water-ish situation. And, Joan, as you guys have been reporting for a long time, water is going to become one of the big deals in the future. Water for people, water for a growing population of planet Earth, for manufacturing, for whatever. We're already seeing water wars in a number of states, aren't we?
That's right, sure.
Maryland, Virginia, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Georgia. You know, out west, you know, forget about it.
Right.
So folks, that could be some good news. And that's the kind of thing the government is good at. That's one of the things I think that's a good thing the government's doing. Joe, let's move over and talk about health care. I just talked about this a little bit with Grace Marie Turner in the last hour. Mandatory health risk assessments. Joan, talk to us about that.
Well, and you're talking about the outlines. Oh, no, you're talking about... I'm sorry. I thought you were over on the health care.
No. This is down
you're
to
back,
under...
You're back under federal
under
regs.
Regulations.
Okay.
Yeah, the health risk assessments.
Okay. Right.
Anything mandatory the government places on businesses is a nightmare to me.
Right. And we're saying they'd be a requirement for insurance coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're saying that appears to violate the privacy protections of the Americans with Disabilities Act.
I hope it does because I don't like the mandates. Mandates, when the government tells me what I've got to do in my business, how I have to treat my employees, you know, I mean, I'm treating my employees well. I don't need the government to come in and tell me how to do that.
Yeah.
And those mandates, ladies and gentlemen, all that is the government sticking its nose under the tent of my business, and I don't like that. I'm going to step on that nose if I get a half a chance. And but now let's move over and talk about on page four, Joan. There are a lot of people trying to get health fair reform through, Joan, and it's basically what a lot of us they're trying to make it is government control of our health care system.
Right. Although we do say a single payer approach is out, and that is something that's kind of been the talk on Capitol Hill.
From your mouth to God's ears.
Whether that's going to be part of it or not, and it sounds like the opponents of single payer have pretty much damped that down.
Well, but I'll tell you, Joan, there are a lot of little Trojan horses in this situation.
Sure.
The government's trying. I mean, they're going to go back and it's going to be single payer light. You know, it's going to be a little Trojan horse, and they're going to say, okay, we'll compromise on that, but let's have this. And so in order to compromise, somebody will give them that, and then the next thing you know, we'll take the light out of it. Now we're getting the full caloric intake. and there are mandates in that too, Joan. So here's my question, Joan.
Mm-hmm.
If we know the government can't run Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, why would we give them 17% of our economy, the healthcare system?
Well, they are running Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security.
Badly.
Ah.
Right? If they can't do that well, what makes us think we should give them our healthcare? To me, that's the big question.
Well, and I think that's why there will not be single payer.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't even want single payer light.
Okay.
Yeah, I want market solutions, Joan.
Okay.
And that's what you're going to hear from me forever. Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time. Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. She'll be back real soon. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, we still have men and women in uniform standing opposed around the world on behalf of you and me. They're putting themselves in harm's way. They're our heroes, too. Don't forget to say a prayer for every one of them. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.